14. Peering at the TV screen, Police Director Barnes said, "So, 3XX24J.
"What's that?" Graham said irritably.
"In that room, that man with the girl. The two, the greener, just laid out. That was the sample person, which the computer thought meant that..."
"I'm trying to see some of my old buddies," Graham said, shaking him off. "Shut up and watch. Just watch. Or is that asking too much?"
Barnes said curtly, "The Wyoming computer selected him as the prototype old man who, because of the announcement of Corden's impending execution, would, and did, go over to the undermen. Now we've caught him. Although, oddly, I don't think that's his wife." "Now, what would the Wyoming computer say?" He began to pace. "What would its response be to the fact that we've caught him? That we have taken possession of the representative old man who..."
"Why do you say it's not his wife?" Graham asked. "Do you think he's shacking up with that broad? And not only has he become an underman, but he's also left his wife and already found someone else? Ask the computer that. See what he makes of that."
"The girl," he thought, "is pretty, in a tomboyish sort of way." "Hmm," he thought.
"Can you see to it that the girl isn't hurt?" he asked Barnes. "Are you able to communicate with the commando teams there in the plant?"
Reaching for his belt, Police Director Barnes brought a microphone to his lips. He said, "Captain Malliard, please."
"Yes, Malliard here, Director."
A puffing voice showing great agitation and stress. "The council chairman asks me to ask you to see to it that the man and girl..."
"Just the girl," Graham interrupted.
"That a girl in a side room who has just been put out by a greener with a B-14 Hops tranquilizing rifle be protected. Now let's see, I'll try to establish the coordinates." Barnes peered owl-wise, sideways, at the screen. "Coordinates 34, 21, then either 9 or 10.
"That would be to my right and a little forward of my own position," Malliard said. "Yes, I'll take charge at once. We've done a good job, Director. In 20 minutes, we've taken virtual control of the plant with a minimum loss of life on both sides."
"Just keep your eye on the girl," Barnes said, and returned the microphone to his belt.
"You're wired up with tools like a telephone linesman," Graham said to him.
Barnes said frostily, "You're doing it again."
"Doing what
again?"
"Mixing up your private life with your public life. That girl,
she has a strange face, pushed in like an Irish mug."
"Council chairman, we face an invasion by alien life forms. We face a mass insurrection, which may..."
"You see a girl like that once in 20 years, Graham said.
"May I ask one favor?" Barnes asked.
"Sure."
Willis Graham felt good now. The efficiency of the police in taking over the 16th Avenue printing plant pleased him, and his libido had been clicked to the on position at seeing the odd girl.
"What favor?"
"I want to have you, with myself present, talk to the man. The man from 3XX24J. I want to know if his dominant feeling is positive, in that they've heard from Provoni, and Provoni is bringing help with him, or if his morale has been broken by being picked up by the police commando raid. In other words..."
"An average sampling," Graham said.
"Yes."
"Okay, I'll take a look at him, but it better be soon. It better be before Provoni gets here. Everything has to be done before Provoni and his monsters arrive." "Monsters?" He shook his head. "What a renegade. What a dispiteous, low-class, self-serving, power-hungry, ambitious, unprincipled renegade. He ought to go down in the history books with that statement about him."
He liked that description of Provoni.
"Jot that down," he said to Barnes. "I'll have that put in the next edition of the Britannica. Just like I said it, word for word."
Sighing, Police Director Barnes got out his tablet of paper and painstakingly wrote the sentence down.
"Add to that," Graham said, "mentally disturbed, fanatically radical, a creature, note that, a creature, not a man, who believes any means whatsoever is justified by the end. And what is the end in this case? A destruction of a system by which authority is put and kept in the hands of those physically constructed so as to have the ability to rule. It is ruled by the most competent, not the most popular. Which is better, the most competent or the most popular? Millard Fillmore was popular. So was Rutherford B. Hayes. So was Churchill. So was Lyons. But they were incompetent, which is the whole point. Do you see my point?
In what way was Churchill incompetent?
He advocated mass night bombings of residential areas, of civilian populations, instead of hitting key targets. It prolonged World War II an extra year.
Director Barnes said, "Yes, I see the point." He thought, "I don't need a lesson in civics," a thought which Graham immediately picked up. That, and much else besides.
"I'll see this man from 3XX24J at 6 o'clock our time tonight," Graham said. "Bring him in. Bring them both in, together. The girl, too."
He caught more unpleasant, dissenting thoughts from Barnes, but ignored them. Like most telepaths, he had learned to ignore the great body of inchoate thoughts in people. Hostility, boredom, outright disgust, envy. Thoughts, many of which the person himself was unaware of. A telepath had to learn to have a thick skin. In essence, he had to learn to relate to a person's conscious, positive thoughts, not the vaguely defined mixture of his unconscious processes. At that region, almost everything could be found, and in almost any one. Every clerk typist who passed through his office had fleeting thoughts of destroying his superior and taking his place, and some aimed much higher than that. There existed fantastic delusional systems of thought in some of the most meek-mannered men and women, and these were, for the most part, new men. Some, who harbored truly deranged thoughts, he had quietly hospitalized for the good of everyone concerned, especially himself. For several times, he had picked up thoughts of assassination, and from the most surprising sources, both big and little. Once, a new man technician installing a series of video links in his private office had lengthily pondered shooting him and had carried the gun by which to do it. Again and again it came up, an endless theme which had come into existence when the two new classes of men had manifested themselves 58 years ago. He was used to it. Or was he? Perhaps not. But he had lived with it all his life, and he did not foresee losing his ability to adapt now at this late point in the game. This point at which Provoni and his non-human friends were about to intersect his own lifeline.
"What's the name of the man from apartment 3XX24J? He asked Barnes.
"I'd have to research that," Barnes said.
"And you're sure the girl isn't his wife?"
"I briefly saw stills of his wife. Fat. Nasty. A shrew from what we got off the videotape from the deck installed in their apartment. The standard 243 deck that's in all those quasi-modern apartments."
"What does he do for a living?"
Barnes peered up at the ceiling, licked his lower lip and said, "Tire regroover. At a used squib lot."
"What the hell's that?"
"Well, they take in a squib, let us say. An examination shows the tread almost worn off the tires, so he takes a hot iron and digs new fake tread into what remains of the tire."
"Isn't that illegal?"
"No."
"Well, it is now," Graham said. "I just passed a law. Make a note of that. Tire regrooving is a crime. It's dangerous."
"Yes, Council Chairman." He scratched a note on his pad, thinking, "We are about to be overwhelmed by alien beings, and this is what Graham is thinking about. Tire regrooving."
"You can't overlook the minor items and the welter of the major ones,"
Graham said, in answer to Barnes' thought. "But at a time like this..."
"Make it a posted misdemeanor without delay," Graham said. "See that every used squib lot gets printed, mark that, printed word of it by Friday."
"Why don't we induce the aliens to land?" Barnes asked sardonically, "and then have this man dig into their tires, so when they try to roll along the ground surface, the tires pop and they're killed in the resulting accident."
"That reminds me of a story about the English," Graham said, During World War II, the Italian government was terribly worried, and rightly so, about the English landing in Italy. So it was suggested that at each of the hotels where the English were staying, they should be terribly overcharged. The English, see, would be too polite to complain. Instead, they'd leave. Leave Italy entirely. Have you heard that story?
No, Barnes said.
We're really in a hell of a mess, Graham said. Even though we killed Corden and knocked out that 16th Avenue printing plant.
Correct, Council Chairman.
We're not gonna be able even to get all the undermen, and these aliens may be like the Martians in H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds. They'll eat Switzerland in one big bite.
Let's reserve further speculation until we actually encounter them, Barnes said. From him, Graham picked up weary thoughts. Thoughts of a long rest, and at the same time, a realization that there was not going to be a rest, long or otherwise, for any of them.
I'm sorry, Graham said, in answer to Barnes' thoughts.
It's not your fault.
Moodily, Graham said,
I ought to resign.
In favor of whom?
Let you double domes find someone, of your type.
This could be considered at a council.
No, Graham said. I'm not gonna resign. There will be no council meeting to discuss it.
He caught from Barnes a fleeting thought, quickly suppressed. Maybe there will be, if you can't handle these aliens, plus the internal uprising. Graham thought they'll have to kill me to get me out of office. Find some way to snuff me, and it's hard to snuff telepaths. But they're probably looking for a way, he decided. It was not a pleasant thought.